Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling, Dialect's Bristol's first podcast, set up in 2001 with a Millennium Grant from the Scarman Trust. We're on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon. That's bcfmradio.com/dialect. This week, the mysterious 5G networks. What are they for? Doesn't 4G do well enough for you? Well, we speak to Mark Stevens about the 5G network being put here in Bristol. We are a test bed. So is this exciting, or are Bristolians being used as guinea pigs? He's had an interesting experience up in Gateshead in challenging the use of 5G there. And as you know, there are dangers from microwave radiation directly, but also how these networks could lead to our lives being hacked and our homes being hacked. Also, the Magnitsky Act. This is an act of the European Parliament and the US government, which prosecutes supporters of Russia, particularly wealthy ones. A Russian filmmaker, Andrei Nekrasov, we speak to, who initially started to make a film, which was about how good the Magnitsky Act was. He ended up changing his mind. Dialect's produced by volunteers. We're online at dialectradio.co.uk and based at the People's Republic of Stokes Croft, the Arts Centre on Jamaica Street. If you have someone you'd like us to interview or would like to volunteer, have a pen ready at the end of the show.
My name's Mark Steelen. First and foremost, I'm an inventor. I'm a technologist. I've been in research and development for over 30 years. And I started my my engineering, I've got an engineering background, material sciences. And I started off as an apprentice, and then I ended up in a nuclear facility where there was part of that facility was a secret nuclear weapons site. At that facility, I worked on a project, I can't tell you anything about, it's called an Official Secrets Act, and that project, we used very high RF signals. So this is non-ionizing radiation. Now, most of the people I work with, there were 16 of us. There's four of us still alive. Obviously, a lot of these young guys died in their 30s and 40s from, leukemia, et cetera. So I understood that non-ionizing radiation was not what, you'll hear some scientists will tell you there's not enough energy in that particular part of the spectrum. That's bungled. So non-ionizing radiation, without doubt, obviously not in its natural occurring field, but in man-made non-ionizing radiation can be pretty toxic. Not only can it be pretty toxic, it can actually be weaponized. So we hear a number of instances where embassies around the world have been attacked. What they most certainly haven't been attacked with is ultrasound weapons, because I know quite a bit about them as well.
So what do you do now, Mark?
I work at a company. I invented a waveguide to put into a motorsports helmet. So it's a company called Review. It was an invention that I had of a waveguide. And what we're really trying to do was put that into a robust environment. The reason for that, I knew about the microwave radiation weapon systems on the battle space, and I knew that what you really need to be safe in a battle space is a fully encapsulated helmet, either it be from a blast or whether it be from a microwave radiation weapon system. Basically direct energy weapon systems are pretty sophisticated. And what I knew from the experience that I had was if I could invent a fully encapsulated helmet, so something with a head-up display system built inside, I was in the money. So anyway, I come up with this invention, and I get lots of inventions. I've done quite a few. I've got a number of patents to my name. I've invented, molecular disassociation reactors, et cetera. I invented a carbon cracker, what I call a carbon cracker, basically disassociation.
But what's the point? What's the point in protecting a soldier's head if the rest of his body is exposed to microwaves?
Well, microwaves actually pass through people pretty easily, and obviously they do cause some damage. However, if it passes through your head, then it can be pretty catastrophic. And one of the reasons why we see a number of troops coming back from battle space, they've actually got brain injuries. the brain area, it needs to be protected. It's obviously a lot more sensitive and can cause some significant neurological disorders if you were to be blasted with microwave radiation, where, I know it's catastrophic, but if you bombard a body with microwave radiation, well, they're going to get cancer.
So it's almost like you're saying that someone wearing a tinfoil hat is not such a bad idea.
Tinfoil hat's not as bad an idea. As long as you've got it on the right way, it's not as bad an idea. Well, where did it come from? Who come up with this tinfoil? I'm pretty... It's a bizarre situation when somebody came up with a tinfoil hat. Why did they not want people wearing tinfoil hats? Tinfoil hats, believe it or not, with 5G around, seem pretty sensible to me.
Well, why is that? 5G. Why?
Well, let us define what 5G is first, because there's a lot of misinformation, significant amounts of misinformation in the mainstream media about what it is and what it isn't. 5G is higher frequency waveforms, but what it most certainly is sub-gigahertz frequency. It's sub-gigahertz for a reason, and that's why I was very suspicious about it. We'll talk about China later on. I was very suspicious about 5G because when it got rolled out, in the sub-gigahertz, it's what's called the coverage layer or the blanket layer. The sub-gigahertz frequency is long-range radar. What that allows me to do is actually interrogate an urban environment pretty sophisticatedly. I can actually identify things in the urban environment. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, this is all a little bit suspicious. So 5G, unlike the mainstream media, where they talk about these higher frequency data forms, and I'm not saying it's not that it is, but its main platform is sub-gigahertz, which allows you to scan its environment. The antennas that we have, and you'll probably find that most of the antennas on the streetlight that's been rolled across the country operate in the 868. 868 is a direct, it's a part of the spectrum that's for autonomous vehicles. It's a part of the spectrum that can interrogate your home. In fact, what they call it in relation to 5G is called backhaul. Backhaul is basically spying. This takes us to China. Most of this equipment is from China. Most equipment has the capability to backhaul all the data out of every device in your home. So your smart TV, your smart whatever smart, they can actually pick up the data from that. It's basically just a blanket coverage in your locality, and I can pick out every single device that you have in your home.
When you call it sub-gigahertz, does that mean it's 868 megahertz, so it's just below 1 gigahertz, is that right?
Well, the narrative of 5G was all about, in the higher gigahertz frequencies, 30 gigahertz, etc. However, its coverage layer is sub-gig, and the reason for that is because it travels better through the urban environment. In fact, it's very, very good for battlefield. It's long-range radar. And that's when I started looking at the, because obviously, fortunately for me, I had one of these antennas thrown at me, so I'd actually be able to do some research on its particular design. It has a high gain part of that antenna. In fact, what it really is a target acquiring piece of equipment. Pretty interesting to know that, your local authority's been duped into fitting on top of the LED streetlights a target acquiring piece of hardware.
But I mean, hang on, it's not just used for target acquiring, is it? It's also, the idea is to up the capacity of our mobile phone networks.
It's got nothing to do with mobile communications. Absolutely nothing. If I was to put the differentiator between 5G, you need what's called a dielectric lens, part of the antenna design. The dielectric lens actually allows you to focus a microwave radiation signal. If I focus a microwave radiation signal through your head to your mobile device, brain injury would probably be the least of your concerns. So consequently, it's got 5G. In fact, I think it was Motorola. Somebody sent me a link to Motorola's output today on the 5G phone design. This is the offset signal system antenna in the phone. And what they're saying is Motorola's actually reporting that it burns people's skin. Well, I'll tell you now, that's the least of their worries, because burning your skin is going to do a lot more damage to your brain. And
I mean, is there any way to detect this stuff if it's getting up to dangerous levels in your house, for example?
You can meter it. Anything over 200 millivolts, you're in trouble. Anything, you know, the bioinitiative report says 30 is should be safe. The Council of Europe, the 1815 resolution that's in international courts, they have said that, you know, they've taken a more pragmatic view and said that 200 millivolts is safe. It isn't, but they have taken that view. Anywhere where,
but can you detect it? I mean, this is the third problem. Is this is invisible, isn't it? How do I detect it?
You can detect it with an EMF meter as long as it's up to 3.5 gigahertz, and what you'll be detecting is a sub gigahertz range. All right, so you can actually pick that up in your home and see what sort of radiation levels you've been exposed to. What you won't be able to pick up is the weapon system. And how you can't pick it up, you'd have to actually understand exactly where it's coming from.
But this the whole thing is being sold, Mark, as just the natural next step from 4G.
Absolutely nothing, mate. 4G is a telecom system, 5G is a weapon. That's the difference. I mean, and 5G is not 5 gigahertz, by the way. 5 gigahertz is, in fact, a telecoms communication signal to data packet. In that part of the spectrum, so it's absolutely got nothing to do with 4G, nothing to do with 3G. I mean, 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G all have risks attached. 5G is a weapon. That's it. And the reason why recently, I think only last week, Senator Blumenthal, he's been watching a few of my videos, quite an interesting character. I think I've been told that Donald Trump's had a look at one or two of them as well. And Blumenthal's asked for the FCC and the FDA and industry to provide him with all of the safety research data. He requested it, I believe it was October last year. Congressional hearing was only 2 weeks ago, and he has been informed that the industry have no research studies or data. Nil. So the FCC have no research data.
Now, the FCC is the Federal Communications Commission. It's the equivalent of something like Ofcom or the Culture, Media and Sport Select Committee here in the UK, the regulators basically in the US. But look, one of the reasons this is in the news again, and it seems to be 5G keeps bouncing back into the news, although none of the Bristol press really seem to have picked up on the fact that there's all these doubts about this system. I mean, even Bristol 24/7, the local BBC, all seem to think it's wonderful that Bristol has been chosen, Mark, in order to use as a place to roll this technology out in the UK?
It's this technology is experimental, test and experimental technologies, technologies that we know are dangerous to life, are absolutely in breach of the Nuremberg Code. The congressional press release I received it last Friday from Blumenthal, and it states that the FCC, the FDA and the industry have got no research safety data. It is most certainly in breach of the Nuremberg Code, and that is then a human rights crime. So we're talking about a human rights crime here, that your local authorities, your universities are testing on children. In fact, I think Bristol's got a bit of a problem with suicide at the minute, especially within its university, and it wasn't something that wasn't predicted. I actually sent communications to Bristol University on the fact that 5G is experimental and would be in breach of the Nuremberg Code because, you know, my knowledge in this particular field, and it was actually a weapon system. They ignored that, went ahead with the, I think they got about £16 million to test this on their students. It is illegal and unlawful.
So what sort of effect is it likely to have on somebody? What do you think it affects? I mean, obviously the industry says that it's perfectly safe, but what do you think it could be doing to students or anyone else that's close to these masts?
Well, the industry can't say it's safe because I haven't got the data, so that would just be a complete lie. They've actually admitted that in the recent congressional hearing. So that's not the case. The industry are absolutely hanging there by whatever. This is uninsurable technology.
So what do you think's happening, Mark?
What I think's happening, I think there's somebody who's asleep at the wheel. Somebody is not protecting our six. And I mean, what I mean by that's your back door. So, you know, whenever you're out on ops, protecting your six is very, very important. You've got to try and see what's coming up behind. nobody's been protecting us, and I believe there's corruption right the way through government. In fact, there was a report which I just read today, specifically in relation to the technologies coming into the country, where this is a serious threat to the realm. Not only is it a threat to the realm, it's a threat to the security and to the people, and basically to humanity. I've always said 5G is an existential threat. We now have the data to show that this is, you know, basically the pirate's code, where there's absolutely no regulatory standards. If we want to talk about product development, all products have safety standards attached. They have safety standards for a specific reason. Products that are potentially a threat to life have even more. Drugs, for instance, if I'm going to develop a cancer drug or any type of drug, it goes through many, many years. It's one of the reasons why pharmaceutical companies spend millions on product development, and they take many, many years to come to market. If an event where I test those drugs on any animal studies where they're shown to be harmed, the drug's pulled immediately. Microwave radiation and these signal systems have been shown continuously when exposed to animals in animal studies to harm animals. In fact, the 5G array that was rolled out in South Korea was actually used as a target acquirement system to shoot porcine, wild boar, in the jungle. In fact, somebody, you go and look for that, it's in Bloomberg. So, in plain sight, where this 5G is in fact a target acquiring weapon system. And that's the reason why, if it had been put to any test, any safety regulatory standard, it would fail. It would fail. And also the LED streetlights that it's attached to, they also will fail, because they are absolutely lethal. So we've got an LED streetlight and rollout across the country. Exeter University in Barcelona have done a study in Barcelona showing that the exposure to the pulse modulator, this is the blue hazy 460 nanometers in and around that part of the spectrum, where those LED streetlights, pulse modulation, it's called flicker in layman's terms, of pulse modulated light, is absolutely lethal, and it has doubled the breast and the prostate cancer. And those LED streetlights have only been in service for 2 or 3 years. What I'm going to tell everybody, the exposure to that LED streetlight, the epidemic is 15 to 20. We're not really sure, because obviously this is an experimental light form that is absolutely lethal. I have the research, I have all the data, I've got all the science.
Okay, look, you've just talked about the suicide, which could be caused by 5G potentially. I mean, we're not saying it is, but it certainly it's possible. If this was causing damage to health to people in Bristol as it's being rolled out, other than that, how would you expect it to unfold? What would be the sort of first symptoms?
Short-term memory loss, ringing in the ears, sore eyes, bleeding from the nose. There's a number of things that where, just a unwellness, shoulder pain, joint pain, shoulder pain, lethargy. And all these things are attributed to microwave radiation. Basically,
has there any evidence that any parts of the country in the UK we've seen that kind of those sort of symptoms?
We've seen it in Gateshead. We had 5G rolled out covertly and in secret. The council are still in denial, even though I'm an expert and I know exactly what 5G is, and they most certainly have 5G here. That technology has caused nosebleeds, miscarriage. We've got, people bleeding, brain tumours. The amount of people that are dying in the area of brain cancer now are absolutely unprecedented. And we have people bleeding in the brain. Lots and lots of very strange cancers, heart cancers, very interesting thing. Radar operators get it. It's very, very rare. We've got a couple of children here who've been reported to have this. And we're talking about cancers that, you'd probably see one in, a couple of 100,000 maybe, where this is, I've got two children not living far from me who've developed a heart cancer. there's not even 100,000 people in Gateshead, and these people are only a couple of miles from me. So there's something very, very strange going on.
It sounds to me as if you're describing our city here in Bristol possibly being turned into this place where we've got a kind of toxic electronic soup in our streets.
Microwave radiation is a class one cancer-causing radiation, period. Science is out. NTP study, Ramzini Institute, and a recent study came out of Israel where this type of phased array battlefield interrogation, because that's what it is, it's battlefield interrogation technology on fitted to street lighting, and it has been shown to be a class one cancer-causing radiation. So that's, you know, that's what you eventually get. But in the meanwhile, it causes neurological disorders where people want to self-harm. People basically don't know what's going on. They're waking up in the middle of the night, so they suffer insomnia. People start feeling well, start having panic attacks. Now, if I was to tell somebody that you were in this soup and you knew what the cause was, then that illness, that potential for people self-internalizing the mental anguish that they're going through, where they commit suicide, would most certainly be alleviated. However, people are left with the thought that they believe it is them. When they go to the doctors and ask for help, doctor will ask you, what's wrong with you? If I was to tell you, you know, that's like me turning around to a guy who's had his leg blew off, coming into a surgery, and he's hopping along, and me saying, well, what's wrong? Why are you hopping? Well, I can see he's got one of his legs blown off. What you can't see is the brain injury that people suffer from this type of microwave radiation. And that then leads to significant mental health, detrimental health issues. And we've got doctors who prescribe drugs, don't tell people what the cause is for in some inexplicable reason. In fact, I think The Lancet did an article recently. So GPs should be starting to get up to speed that the toxicity and the illnesses that they're starting to see exhibited in their surgeries are due to microwave radiation.
What about the fact that we've now got this kind of spat going on between the big US 5G manufacturers, who maybe you could tell us who they are, and Huawei from China? I noticed that even just this week on the Register, which is used mostly by internet geeks, they're now saying that the Germans have said to the Americans, we will have Huawei 5G systems if we want to, and they've told the Americans where to go. But it does seem as if there is a sort of line being drawn with this technology across the world, where some people will accept the Chinese 5G and other people the US 5G, and whichever you accept has got some element of potential control over your country. What I'm really asking is, why has this kind of fight broken out between Huawei and the Americans?
I think, well, obviously Donald Trump's watched a few of my videos and has realised that, because this technology didn't come from China, it was actually developed in the USA. It was developed, well, basically developed in Germany many, many years ago, where, you know, Mammoth was the first phased array radar system. So that technology was taken from Germany, went to California. It was developed and then digitised and became extremely toxic. A little bit more potent, let's say, and it then ended up, ending up being manufactured in a far better cost-effective area, which was China. So China is basically a little bit more advanced. North Korea, countries like that, very, very advanced when it comes to this type of technology. Don't believe the mainstream narrative; it's not true. So these people understand exactly how capable this is. And unfortunately, it's been rolled out near a town near you. Because most of the hardware, you know, it doesn't matter who the manufacturer is, doesn't matter if it's Intel or other, most of the chipsets, the hardware, the PCB boards, the antennas, are manufactured in China, because it is the most cost-effective country in the world to make things. And
so why have the Americans decided they don't want Huawei? I don't really understand. I mean, surely it's whoever controls the network, not the manufacturer, that really matters.
No, because the equipment can all be embedded. You can embed all the equipment with just about as much backdoor capability. I mean, Americans are past masters of this, by the way, so they know exactly how you can actually embed your little backdoors into these systems. And unfortunately, 5G, like as I said, it's got nothing to do with telecommunications. It is a communication between a machine to a machine, so it's M2M. It is not for humans. I can show you the data. I've got the antenna design data, and I can show you that if you were to get in between your signal from a 5G antenna, you would be in serious trouble. And what we're proposing is that we have autonomous vehicles, ATVs, AUVs, and people with 5G. There's never going to be a 5G phone. Talk about maybe a 5 gigahertz phone, but not a 5G phone. 5G from the antenna in the phone, if orientated through your head, would be extremely dangerous. So the whole thing's a bit of a scam, really.
I noticed the South China Morning Post has done an interesting article saying that this is really a kind of a military rivalry going on between Huawei and who are the main manufacturers in the US?
The main, you've got TI, you've got Intel, you've got it, but they're not manufacturers in the US. These are international companies. They'll manufacture all over the world. They'll have factories in China, they'll have factories in Korea, they'll have factories in Taiwan. I was talking to some of the Intel people there in South Korea not long ago, some of the research and development people there. So, yes. They've got head offices in the US. That's not necessarily where they actually manufacture their products. These are global businesses, so there's no real, there's absolutely no real, sort of geolocation where you could actually tie them down. They may have a registered office in the US, but that doesn't necessarily say
okay,
who they
so,
really are.
So what's the ultimate capability of a system like this? If you were an evil person, you wanted to use it for evil purposes, what are the worst case scenarios that you think could be done with a network like 5G?
5G is an over-the-horizon weapons system. It's absolutely, I can take a city out with it.
How could you do that?
Well, the weapon system engages at 31,000 elements. If I was to show you the power, and obviously, if I'm flying a plane and I've got a direct energy weapon attached, I may have 100 elements in that plane. Obviously, I've got to generate the power. I've got 31,875 elements engated on top of the streetlight. Now, those elements could take down a city. Each element, the more elements you have, the more focus you have, the more lethality your weapon is. They calibrate to each other, and then they punch out what's called a beam wave. That beam wave is an offset signal. That beam wave, that focality, increases the lethality. So depending on how many elements you have, and like I said, I've got 31,875 just in gated. Got a few million across the country, I'd suggest, because I've got them in Sheffield, London. I was in Kensington last week. I've got them in. Got some really nice real estate where they can actually look into your home, where they can see where your gold is, where your watches are. They can see where your safe is. These things are absolutely well beyond most people's comprehension. This is a 3D map. This is a scanner. It's basically a way of it's a way of actually being able to monitor, control. It's just unbelievable, and it is unbelievable, and that's why I always say to people, do your own research.
Okay, where's a good place to do that research, Mark?
Save Us Now Party. Try the website, and I can tell you, Brundtland Weapon Systems. I can send people things if they really want to get in. Interested in the weaponry side of it, I can send them all that. But what I'm going to say to people is 5G is an existential threat. Fact. Microwave radiation, not safe. LED street lighting, absolutely lethal. And in breach of the Nuremberg Code, this is a crime against humanity. What I say to people is do something about it. Stop sitting on your computers. Stop talking about it. Your local authorities, your government is in breach of the law.
But can you give us at least a couple of websites? I mean, maybe we're not going to hear about this on the 9 o'clock news on the BBC. So where can we go to get some reliable info and some of the research, Mark?
There's the Environment Health Trust. There's the National Toxicology Programme study that shows that microwave radiation is in fact a class one cancer-causing radiation. Just go online, have a look at that. There's a YouTube video platform where I've put quite a number of videos up. They're pretty brutal. It's called 5G Killer Tech. Mark Anthony, go and have a look at them. And get up to speed. You know, do your own research. Martin Parr, Professor Martin L. Parr, Professor Ollie Johansson, Professor Leonard Hardle, Professor Deborah Davis. I mean, I can reel quite a few off. The 370 of the world's leading scientists who have stated that this thing is absolutely lethal, and they agree with me.
Well, look, finally, what would you say to people that say, well, I mean, there would be no way that something that's as unsafe as you seem to be suggesting would ever get approved?
Smart meters, you know, they're all lethal, they're all experimental. Well, I'm quite surprised that they did get approved. And all I'm trying to say is that I'm as shocked as anybody how any of these products, what I call killer technology, came to market. Absolutely. It is unbelievable. I actually find it quite difficult. And even though I know the technology, and I've been a technologist for 30 years, I find it absolutely bizarre. Outrageous. It is unlawful and illegal. Fact. It's a breach of the Nuremberg Code.
Nice one. Thanks ever so much.
Thanks, Neil.
All the best. And I'll do my best to find all those various professors and put up some links to them.
Brilliant. Thanks, Neil.
All the best. Cheers. Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
I'm Andrei Krasov, and I'm a Russian-born filmmaker who lived in the West for a long time, you know, including the UK, working for, you know, making, basically I'm independent, but made films for the BBC and Channel 4, but also for the German and, you know, French.
So which of your films that you've made over here might we have seen?
Well, I made a film about Alexander Litvinenko, for example, two films, one for the Beeb, it was called A Very Russian Murder. My friend Sasha, A Very Russian Murder. And then I made a longer film, which was in Cannes, called, and it was distributed, and I think it's still on Netflix and distributed in the UK and America. It's called, in the UK, it's called the Rebellion, the Litvinenko case. And in America, it's called Poisoned by Polonium, the Litvinenko Files. And, well, that's just one. And others, art programs for, you know, like, on Pasternak, Prokofiev. So I'm not only political. I mean, I kind of, in a way, I became concerned, by the way. You know, I'm a critic. I've been a critic of the Putin government since Putin came to power. And I made films about the war in Chechnya. And that's precisely my sort of problem with Bill Browder, is about whom I made my last film, my recent film, which is called The Magnitsky Act, Behind the Scenes. And the problem with and Bill Browder, who's, you know, gradually becoming very famous, he wasn't when I started making a film. There's a film. But basically, he's a hedge fund manager who went to Russia, made a killing, you know, a lot of money in Russia, but then had the problems with the Russian authorities. And according to the Russians, he evaded tax, and he was convicted of that in absentia in 2013. And I think he actually made up this sort of red herring narrative as a fake alibi about his he calls him a lawyer, Magnitsky. He was an accountant for Browder, who was actually working for Browder during those that tax evasion case.
Many people will have heard of the Magnitsky case. Yeah. Many people will have heard of the Magnitsky Act. Can you sum it up for us in a nutshell?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, well, I mean, the problem is that the two narratives, two conflicting narratives. Browder's story is that he went there, Browder, as an honest sort of hedge fund manager, made a lot of money for his clients, for himself as well, and then because his lawyer or accountant uncovered a sort of a plot, the authorities. The plot by the Russian police and authority against Browder's fund, Browder's companies. So Magnitsky allegedly uncovered the plot, which because Browder moved all his money. Basically, the Russian police was after Browder's money. They tried to fleece him out of his money, but because Browder was very clever and moved money out of the country, the Russian police took over Browder's companies, which were kind of his investment mechanisms, took over them, unbeknownst to Browder, and on behalf of those companies, pulled off this tax refund. Basically, Browder paid some tax, and the criminals, unbeknownst to Browder, returned money, tax money from the Russian treasury. And Magnitsky, his accountant, Browder's accountant, uncovered it. He was arrested. Because obviously the police didn't. Magnitsky was a whistleblower. They retaliated against the whistleblower, arrested and killed him brutally in the prison. Okay, unfortunately, I believe that story because as a critic of the Russian government, I kind of tend to believe the stories of the brutal Russian regime, going after the whistleblowers. But unfortunately, I uncovered that this whole story is basically a red herring, diversionary kind of story. And in fact, Browder's companies were not, as he said, stolen. He was in control of those companies and was aware of this operation of a fake tax refund. So in my film, I prove that he was aware. He must have been aware of it. And therefore, he has a lot of questions to answer. I didn't find the proof he actually received. And we're talking about $200 million of a tax refund because, his fund was over $4 billion. So when he was taking that money out of the country, he had to pay the tax. And so he probably thought, well, it's too much of a tax paying, $230 million. And frankly, Russia is corrupt. I'm not saying Russia is not corrupt. And these things happen in Russia. People do get these, steal basically money in this fake tax refund from the Russian government. He's not the first one. Maybe it was the biggest one. But you do those things. And unfortunately, he can't prove he didn't do it, and the burden of proof is on him. And I showed in the film that he can't prove that he was not in control of this company. So then he takes, and unfortunately, very sadly, Magnitsky, after he was arrested, he died in prison. He was ill. But the most recent development, and the Russian government, the Russian prosecutor general, accused Browder of having killed Magnitsky, or probably killed Magnitsky. They actually, quite interestingly, they used the expression "highly likely," the expression that were used in the Novichok Skripal case. Highly likely, kind of mocking the British government. They said, highly likely, Browder killed his own accountant because, and that's a fact. The Magnitsky was a very valuable witness for the Russians. He was in jail, and he was, as far as I I found out it was about to start telling basically the truth about this whole Browder organization, which he knew a lot about. So that sounds very complicated, but, you know, basically it took, my film was 2 hours and it's long, but, you know, people who see it think it's convincing, but the problem is that Browder consistently tried to ban it. Now, two years ago, there was a premiere scheduled in the European Parliament in Brussels, and it was cancelled like five minutes before the beginning because of the threat of Browder's lawyers kind of threatened everybody, including the European Parliament, you know, the producers of the film, the TV channels, one of the biggest TV channels in Germany, who was behind the ZDF. You know, they were all afraid of those lawsuits, so they cancelled it. Premiere, then they cancelled TV transmissions, and he the most recently he Browder managed to make Vimeo to take down our film. So it's a real case of censorship, and I dare say he's invited to debate with me, but he never does. Basically, you know, I'm being gagged, and that's this is a very sad story.
So do you think that Magnitsky was killed by Bill Browder? If so, what evidence do you have?
Well, I don't have any evidence. You know, I don't live in Russia, so I hear it as you do. I've heard it, you know, I read the news on the BBC or something like that. So the Russians say they now have whether they have the evidence, or they say it's highly likely. You know, I didn't look at the evidence, and since working on this film, and I must say, I'm actually my background is kind of, I'm not really an investigative journalist. I had to become an investigative journalist because I worked in the theater, and the whole film about Magnitsky was conceived as a tribute to Magnitsky, as this whistleblower here, because I believe Brower, but I had to become. I looked at the documents and I looked, well, things didn't add up. So I have to look at the evidence first. But what I can tell you, you know, I have become a specialist in the case. So, and what I can tell you responsibly, that Browder was the only, well, Browder as an organization, you know, it's a collective, basically, concept, because the HSBC, by the way, Browder was technically, he calls himself an investor, he was technically an investment consultant, and behind him was HSBC and some Americans like Ziff Brothers and big finances. So, so basically we're talking about this, you know, very, very big case. And what I can tell you, that group was the only one who stood to benefit from Magnitsky's death. Now, they claim the Russian police murdered Magnitsky because it sort of sounds plausible, you know, the Russian police, of course, it's brutal police when the Magnitsky was in prison. But Magnitsky, what I actually can reproach the Russians for, they should have put Magnitsky in the 5-star hotel because he knew so much about Browder. So, you know, Russian prison system may be horrible. You know, it's actually, you also people are very prejudiced. How about American prisons? You know, so it's kind of, it has to be looked very, very specifically. But Browder was the one to benefit. If you go on the principle, who was to benefit? Imagine Browder's narrative. Without Magnitsky's death, nobody died there. Browder's narrative would be kind of null and void, because the major argument is purely emotional. You know, so his accountant, he calls him lawyer, died in a Russian jail. That's 99% of the argument. Nobody looks at the documents I came to be looking at.
Because European Union is voting, isn't it, at the moment, about bringing in its own Magnitsky Act, like the United States, which is a way of sanctioning those people on the Russian side who they believe were behind his murder.
Well, exactly. But you first have to prove that Magnitsky was murdered by the Russians, and you know the whole thing about the Magnitsky Act and the Magnitsky List, because Magnitsky Act has this Magnitsky List attached to, is that basically Browder managed to put people who investigated him and Magnitsky for tax evasion and other misdeeds. It's a wonderful mechanism. Imagine somebody investigates you or whoever in the UK, you know, UK, and you have this possibility to put them on this sort of name and shame. It's very important psychologically that they're called thieves and murderers, because those people actually, you know, this kind of story mutated, and now some journalists call this Magnitsky List as if it was full of some oligarchs and some Putin's friends. Nothing of the kind. If you look at them, they're just basically cops and some judges and some lawyers. So they kind of very, most of them have no money in the West, but and because the list state, the law says those people on the list will not be allowed to travel to the United States or now to Europe. Any money they can find, that were frozen, but also psychologically, they're murderers and thieves. You know, I know two of those. I know two people on the list. I can swear you, I can go to any court to prove they have nothing to do with murder or theft. You know, they have kids growing up, and you know, and another big mistake the West does is that they portray this Russia as, you know, everybody's controlled by Putin. Russia's full of the kind of media. The internet, but not only internet, which support Browder. That you have to remember. You know, when we had a premiere in Moscow, our film, after the film, I was like thrown objects at me. You know, people screamed at me because people, a lot of people in Russia are totally pro-Western, support Browder and hate Putin. So there's a lot of media. So you have those cops. Have the you know, kids growing up and saying, Daddy, I'm a murderer or a thief.
So what's going to happen, you know, do you think, if the European Union does pass this into law? Does it make going to make up much difference?
Well, I heard that the Dutch proposal, the Netherlands version of this law, avoids calling it after Magnitsky. And Browder is furious about it, because the whole motivation, Browder's motivation, is just to kind of to cast Magnitsky's name in stone. I don't believe, as I said, Browder's motivation is human rights, because, you know, as I said, when I was defending human rights in Russia, making a film about the Chechen children, Chechnya pummeled by the Russian Air Force, he was making money in the neighboring Kalmykia Republic. He didn't care about Russian human rights. So only after he was investigated for tax evasion, he became this sort of human rights defender. But basically, his interest is to have a Magnitsky name mentioned as much as possible everywhere. And because it's a law, if it's a law, you know, imagine passed by Congress, signed by Obama, and then the equivalent in the UK, and now in Europe. So who am I? Who am I already, but it will be, to claim his story is a hoax? Is so many countries made a law. So that for him, it's pure psychology. And I think he's still afraid. You know, I'm sure the UK will never extradite him to Russia, but it's partly subconscious, because Russians do want to put him on trial, and his motivation is to avoid it. And you know, some countries might, if they really find out the time right, some countries might, you know, consider that.
Well, look, I mean, you were working in Chechnya.
That's the motivation.
You were working in Chechnya, yeah. For example, yeah. And I noticed
in early 2000.
Right. I wonder what, if you have any knowledge of the Anna Politkovskaya case, because this is another one. Can you just tell us what you know about that? Because I noticed that she was investigating Putin when she died, yeah. But she was also investigating Berezovsky and the Chechen mafia, wasn't she?
Anna Politkovskaya was a friend of mine. If you watch my film, it's a different country, it's called differently. In the UK, it's called Rebellion, the Litvinenko case. And in the United States, it's called Poisoned by Polonium, the Litvinenko file. Basically, Litvinenko, Sasha Alexander Litvinenko was a mutual friend of ours, of myself and Anna Politkovska. So in the film, I didn't know she would be killed, but there are a few scenes of me having meals with her, chatting with her, you know, smiling at each other, and she actually mentioned it was I think in Germany or somewhere in Western Europe, and she it was in Germany, and I'd just seen Sasha Litvinenko in London, and she says, we just spontaneously, the camera caught us talking about Litvinenko with Politkovska, and said, "Oh, didn't he say hello when you've just seen him? Didn't he say hello?" I said, "Of course he did. Of course he did." So it's all in the record. Watch the film, the Litvinenko case. So we're friends, and you know, of course, it was a horrible, horrible shock. This wonderful, beautiful woman, and you know, journalists of. Also have all kinds of motivation, but I can swear you, she was an idealist. You know, she wasn't working. You know? It wasn't for money or for fame. She was a real idealist, and a very honest person. And of course, it's a shock. But she wasn't really investigating Putin, to be honest. She was investigating human rights violations and, you know, murders and all kinds of horrible things that were happening in Chechnya, and it was a war. And then she gets killed. So, it's reasonable to blame Russians or even the Russian state, even though you know, to be honest, indirectly, because no one's produced any proof. You know, even the Russian opposition. And I looked at it. There's no direct proof. She was killed on Putin's birthday, by the way, in October. You know, and it was, you know, we thought then it's a birthday present for Putin, because Putin probably didn't like her, whatever. But that is not a proof he killed her. But she was obviously killed. It was a political assassination, a horrible, vile political assassination. This beautiful woman killed in front of her on the doorstep. And I have to say, Litvinenko blamed Putin for it. You know, I didn't see a proof, but you know, it's still, you know, there was a court case in Russia, and they blamed some Chechens, and apparently, you know, the proof they did it. But you know, the Magnitsky story taught me one thing. You know, and I made a film about Litvinenko where, indirectly, and I said I have no proof that Putin knew it, but I indirectly blamed the Russian security services or some rogue agents, because Litvinenko really would get up in the morning and start basically blaming Putin for everything, and that was his life. He hated Putin, hated the regime, hated Putin's Russia and everything about it. So it was kind of, on a highly likely principle, it was kind of plausible, that was my kind of politics at the time.
So, what do you make of what happened with Berezovsky? Because he was, one minute he's taking Putin over to Switzerland on skiing trips, next minute they're the most bitter enemies, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a very strange case. And again, you know, the Magnitsky story taught me to look at evidence before I really blame someone. But, you know, my first reaction, and maybe still, I knew Berezovsky. I knew him. I didn't know him. You know, he wasn't a close friend, but we were kind of friendly, you know, like a good acquaintance. And psychologically, I find it very difficult to believe that somebody like that would take his own life. You know, so just from knowing him, I didn't look at the evidence, and as far as I know, the UK inquest said it's basically an open
verdict. Well, that's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast. You can download it to listen on your phone or in the car. Subscribe to our email list and listen the week before broadcast if you like at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests Mark Stevens and Andrei Nekrasov, also to studio engineers Dave Bazanko and Joss Chivers. Dialects, a Bristol Broadband Co-op production, catch us on Bristol Community FM 93.2 every Tuesday at noon, and anyone can contribute. Contact us through the People's Republic of Stokescroft off Jamaica Street on 0117 909 6897. They're online too at prsc.org.uk. If you have some of your precious spare time, you can volunteer with us or for hundreds of opportunities elsewhere in Britain via the National Volunteering website. That's do-it.org. Thanks for listening to Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. I'll be back on Friday with my two-hour BCFM politics show live from 6 till 8 p.m. Meanwhile, till next Tuesday midday, from the Dialect crew, goodbye for now.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
'Cause I'm free.